I can't believe we're going to do a movie that's not horror.
I feel pretty good. I'm not scared at all. I feel kind of invincible.
Yeah. Me too. I've got a very positive attitude about this.
Me too. Is it getting hot in here, or is it just me?
Hello, and welcome to the Horror House Podcast. I'm Dave.
I am Chris. This week in the Horror House, we are talking about Big Trouble in Little China. Is this our first kind of horror-adjacent movie? We've had some horror-adjacent things. This feels like it's even like a peg further.
Yeah, this is pushing the envelope into what I eventually hope to turn this into, which is a kung fu podcast.
Understood.
I'm slowly infiltrating and indoctrinating, Chris.
I should mention we're two dudes that like to talk about horror from movies to real life, and this week, of course. It is directed by John Carpenter, though, so we got that horror aura still there.
And there are horror-ish things.
Oh, yeah.
In here.
Oh, yeah.
It's a horrific stand-in for America, Jack Burton is.
Big talk, little game. Yeah. And this came after Starman, but before Prince of Darkness. I had originally thought that this was after Prince of Darkness. My mistake. And what a run of movies. Starman, Big Trouble in Little China, Prince of Darkness. That's crazy. And of course, they live after that.
And John Carpenter is, I mean, it's easy to forget about him, I feel like, with Wes Craven and Romero, but, I mean, Carpenter's put it out as far as, like, a size of his catalog. And I know it's not all about the size of the guy's catalog, ladies. I've been told my catalog is just fine. But you know, he's got such good stuff and so varied. Like, there's a Romero type, you know, there's a Wes Craven type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would just say Cronenberg has a feel, and I'm not saying everything. I mean, like, Fast Times clearly is its own thing. But Carpenter really, he's all over the place.
There is a quality to Carpenter's stuff that I don't know that I can describe what I think I am seeing, but there is just something about his movies that is not in others. Maybe that has to do with just how fast he is at it. Like, there's not a whole lot of trying to perfect something. Like, if something's good, it's good. And I think that's part of the reason he got the job for Big Trouble in Little China, was they wanted this done by X, and Carpenter was known to, like, get in, get out, and bada bing, bada boom. There you go.
I just watched an interview with him today where he kind of talked about this, and this had come out right when the Halloween, or the Corey trilogy, was coming out, which you can say what you want. I know he's only in the third one. That's enough.
The Corey trilogy.
He talked about that. He talked about, like, yeah, I put together, I you could always look at something and say, I could have done this different. I could have done that different. I could have put the camera here. Mm-hmm. I could put the camera there. But he said at the end of the day, you know, you just have to finish it and move on to the next project. And you know, there's some wisdom in that. I think seen plenty of movies that were fiddled with till they become, they lose the message. They lose the meaning.
Yeah.
You know, and an interesting thing that another interesting thing I saw about Carpenter is that he's not a storyboard guy.
I think I've read something similar as well.
Yeah. The quote, I'm going to butcher the quote, and you can blame Carl T. Huber's Starlight Distillery for me butchering this quote tonight. But basically, he was saying storyboard, even if it doesn't actually lock you in mentally, it locks you into this is the shot we're going to get, where he much prefers to come into each shot and really get creative with it. Right. Oh, I can do this, and I can do that. And
you reminded me, Cronenberg, also not a storyboard guy. And for that same kind of reason.
That freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Carpenter, from an interview I once watched not long ago, was not a fan of Cronenberg at a certain point. he's like, fuck the pretentious piece of shit, essentially. I'm like, god damn. Well, anyways, when rich people fight, who cares?
right.
And so
it's like when the NFL goes on strike, it's like millionaires and billionaires fighting, who cares?
Yeah. But that's funny that they both kind of have similar storyboard. It's like, you're blocking stuff out when you don't, you get there in the moment.
Yeah, but how many of his own soundtracks did Cronenberg write and perform?
Right. They certainly has that over him.
If there's anything Carpenter movies have that, like, give it a Carpenter feel, I feel like it's that synth.
Yeah.
Sound.
Yep. I actually wasn't sure, because I don't know this movie like you do. It's kind of one of those areas where I didn't know. And watching it, I'm like, I wonder if Carpenter did the soundtrack to this or not. And then it cuts, you know, that first scene, and then it cuts to the Pork Chop Express barreling down the road with that, like, synth rock going. I'm like, he fucking totally did the soundtrack to this.
Yeah, you know it. You know
immediately. And it's fucking great. And I know, to go along with that he didn't write this movie, but he also didn't want to do, like, that kind of Chinese, Asian oriented kind of themes and music and stuff, because he just didn't want to go that route with it. And I think he did good. There's moments of kind of, like, more Asian themes on the soundtrack later on, but it's not like that thing that everybody knows, that, you know, you're like, of course. And I think he did. I think he did great with the.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
It's pretty common knowledge that this was originally written as a, like, turn of the century Western, or,
right,
you know, pioneer Western, still in San Francisco. But, you know, instead of stealing, instead Jack Burton trying to get his truck back, he'd be trying to get his horse back and stuff. And I can't even imagine it like that.
Well, the original writers, Gary Goldman and David Z. Weinstein. There was this whole thing. Did you read about, like, the bringing in the script doctor, essentially, with
yes, yeah,
Richter. What's his name? W.D. Richter. And so they bring in this guy to kind of work it up.
See you at the party, Richter.
Yeah. And so he, I mean, from what I'm reading, he essentially had to rewrite the entire movie because they wanted, or he wanted to modernize it because he didn't think the fantasy with the Wild West worked so well. And kind of all that was kind of left was Lopan's story. And then Carpenter, of course, with his touches, but they didn't want to give the original writers credit, and wanted to give all the credit to W.D. Richter. And then the Writers Guild got into it and eventually giving credit back to Goldman and Weinstein and changing Richter's to just adaptation by, which is kind of lame. And even Carpenter was not quite happy with that outcome, but from what I understand, like, he rewrote a big portion of this movie. It would have been the same.
I mean,
in San Francisco.
If I take the Hellraiser script and I'm like, look, we're going to take this out of this setting and we're going to put it into a children's hospital, and you know, it's still the same story, still the same characters, you know. I mean, that,
yeah.
Now, it sounds like Richta really changed a lot, but I mean, you get some credit, you can deserve some credit for coming up with the basic idea.
I probably would have went the direction of written by this W.D. Richter, maybe, and then do based on
story by,
yeah, maybe story by, okay, Goldman and Weinstein, story and characters by Weinstein and Goldman, maybe. But, you know, rich people, they probably, I mean, they're writers, they're on strike again. Respect. Get your wad, dudes.
Yeah.
Which there may be a writer listening to this being like, this whole podcast is bullshit. They're not advocating for us. I will
almost always side with labor in any kind of dispute. Now, what has me rolling my eyes is these reports. For example, Ryan Reynolds, who is known for like doing impromptu takes, and he's not going to be able to do that,
yeah,
because
for Deadpool 3. Just,
yeah, because only the director can make changes. Okay, so he's going to make himself a director. I mean, you know, they'll find a way around that, but it's dumb.
Hey, hot take. Since he's bringing Hugh Jackman and the Fox Men back, I fuck Deadpool 3. I'll say it. I'm going to be the only one that says that. I don't give a fuck about the Fox X-Men.
Hot take.
And I never will. Okay. But yeah, I just literally saw the other day they're bringing back several actors.
Halle Berry, Storm.
Yeah. Famke Jensen, Jean Grey. That guy that was Cyclops. And I'm just like, fuck. I just want to be done with the Fox X-Men, dude. I'm ready for Marvel to do the X-Men. And it just seems like every year that goes by, they add three more to this ever happening. And I'm not hyped for Deadpool 3. I'm just not because of this.
That's kind of what fucked up the X-Men in the first place, is it was just like, we got to get more guys in here.
Yeah.
And then the story. Yeah. So
I just don't. But that is funny. I just had to air my grievances about this whole fucking. But that is funny that he can't ad lib, because that would involve writing, and
that's dumb. He needs to collaborate with the writer and have the writer just put in the script like ad lib line here.
Just, I mean,
and then like if the writer says, you know, I want the actor to create something here, that's part of acting. I don't think that takes away from the writer.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like that even gets a credit if they ad-lib something. Like, granted, I mean, Ryan Reynolds is probably an outlier in that regard, because he probably ad-libs a lot and probably gets you know, more than the usual.
I just found out this week in Beetlejuice, when Beetlejuice is summoned, he's in the graveyard, he kicks the tree and the tree falls over because it's obviously not a real tree, it's a set piece.
Right.
And then he looks at the camera and it goes, ah, what a
nice fucking model. Honk, honk.
Nice fucking model. I just found out that that was all ad lib.
Yeah.
Like the tree was not supposed to fall over
Michael Keaton,
I
man.
I just found out, but I was not sitting here thinking, what a great writing, and then found that out, and then now I'm not suddenly like, oh, that writer. I don't know why they even give him credit. Michael Keaton invented that line. No, I mean, come on, man.
As a 40-year-old.
I feel like that's something they're sticking on just to have a negotiating wedge at that point.
But here we are with what essentially Goldman, Weinstein, and Richter, and whatever confabulation you want to presume, directed by Carpenter, over the course of 10 weeks, I want to say, Big Trouble in Little China. Did you know, I only saw one source say this, and I didn't try to really figure out if it was true, but apparently a certain Jackie Chan was Carpenter's first choice for Wang.
I did hear that, but that his English wasn't good
enough. Yes. I didn't try to really dig into that. It come up in like a video that I watched, and I was like, huh, okay. But I honestly, I don't think Jackie Chan would have been right, because
in 1986. So in 1986, Jackie Chan was not kind of the as into the comedic side. He was still
very serious kung fu
acting yet. Yeah, he really was. And it was because, in 1980, and even before, he was already being crowned like the next Lee.
Right.
So he really tried hard to be this very serious actor and stuff like that. And then, that all fell apart for the good, I think, because I love Jackie Chan. But 1983, he was not even really known in the States yet. I can't remember what year did Project A come out.
Project A, I don't know that I've even heard of this.
Yeah, so Project A was 1983. So yeah, if still very intense. Project A is the movie that almost killed Jackie Chan. He had a scene where he jumped off of the top of a building or off of a balcony into a tree.
Oh, right.
And the tree was supposed to sway over so he could jump out of the tree into the next building. And instead, branches broke and he free fell.
Right.
Every branch of the tree as he went down ended up breaking his back and severely hurting himself. And, I don't think it would have been. It makes sense when you tell me Jackie Chan wasn't as good at English at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that he wouldn't have been right for the role because, I mean, Jackie Chan's actually a pretty big guy, size wise, where Dennis is fairly slender and really.
Yeah.
Like, there's no English is his first language. Dennis was born in California. So, there's no language barrier at all there.
It may have worked out better as well, him next to Kurt Russell, because he is a little, more slender. And Kurt Russell is Kurt Russell. So that may have worked in their favor.
They get a little, Yeah, they get a little contrast in size there.
Yeah. And I mean, he's Walter from Prince of Darkness for me. And so seeing him, and of course Victor Wong in this, and I was thinking that I thought this was shot after Prince of Darkness, but I was completely wrong. But God, there's a little part of me that wants to take footage from this and try to cut a Prince of Darkness 2 trailer with what they have.
Oh.
Because I think it would be very possible. Somebody may have already done it. Yeah. If you're listening and you know of something like this, I want to see it so bad.
The black blood of the earth.
But yeah, this has a great cast. Aside from Dennis Dunn and Kurt Russell, of course, Victor Wong. But we have James Hong, who, God, what hasn't he been in? He's been in about fucking everything at this point and is still going strong.
Yeah, oh yeah. And he's a great actor. Everything Everywhere All at Once. I love this movie. One of my favorite movies of the 2000s. And here he is as Lopan.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
One of the horror elements for me.
Thunder, who became kind of the inspiration for Mortal Kombat.
Yes. Not just him.
Several characters.
Yeah, which I had no idea. Like, as I was watching it, I'm like, that's fucking Raiden. That's cool as shit. And then I literally, in my notes as I was watching, I was like, did this influence Raiden? Did they rip him off? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. But it's fucking cool. It's so cool. And Lopan
I mean, you could make the argument that Johnny Cage is based on Jack Burton.
In some regards, for sure.
You know, he's the bravado Hollywood guy, you know. I mean, they heroed him up a little bit, which is kind of, the studio made John Carpenter go back and hero up Jack Burton a little. So
the whole intro to the movie is because of that. Like, he seems kind of bumbling and useless in a way. Can we make him more more better?
Yeah. Which is missing the point that, you know, he's full of bravado, but he's brave and he's there for his friend and he's, you know, doing this, but he's not the skilled player. When the big battle starts, he starts out by knocking himself out by shooting the fucking ceiling.
So I loved the whole Jack Burton and Wang dynamic, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it's not something that's never been done before and or been done since. I mean, but it's done so infrequently that whenever I see something like that, where like the sidekick is more of the hero than the actual air quotes hero, it always, and that may just be like a personality disorder in myself, that I'm like, ooh, the hero is not as good. As the secondary guy.
So you must love Green Hornet.
Yeah. Yes. Green Hornet and Kato, Lone Ranger and Tonto, right? I don't know that Lone Ranger quite. Maybe the more modern movie. But yeah, that's something that always just kind of tickles my fancy, is that idea. One of the things that I do remember from... So I had only watched this movie in bullshitty segments as a kid, seeing it on TV and whatnot here and there over the course of several decades. One of the things that I remember Lopan's creepy ass makeup, and I remember Wang doing that run in the doorway archway kind of thing.
Yes.
That is what I remember the most from the movie, because it is and was so cool. I would see that movie on TV as a kid and just want to see that part. And that's probably why I don't remember a whole lot of other things that happened. I just really loved seeing him do that.
Did you remember the monster? And I know before show tonight, you said you hadn't remembered the eye creature.
I did remember the Bigfooty kind of what do the Japanese call him? I forget, like a hairy man.
But yeah,
but I did remember that.
He might be tied to the Creepshow universe. That could be the monster in the box or his cousin or some shit.
Big scary, big horror ending because, I mean, Jack Burton leaves. He don't give Kim Cattrall the big smooch. It's like, what is wrong with you? And then, of course, you know, he's talking on his CB radio, and then bam, the monster is hitching a ride. What happens next? It's very takes a.
We should make a sequel where him and the monster are our buddies, buddy truck drivers.
I'm down. I'm down.
And who would have thought, given how much we shit on Sarah Parker, that we would have a movie with Kim Cattrall?
Oh, I ain't never hating on Kim Cattrall. I'll hate on some Sex and the City. Or Sex and the City. I forget the actual thing. That's one of the Mandela effects things that I think we talked about.
Yeah.
But she's like 80s Chloe Grace Moretz, essentially. Or vice versa. They look very similar as people.
Maybe because I've aged out, but I can't. Like, when I was in the 80s, living in the 80s, like, Kim Cattrall is like, yeah, she's all right. And now I look at Chloe Grace Moretz, and I can't do that. I'm like, she's a child. So
fair. You got a moral compass.
I've got a teenage daughter and that. Feel like I've watched Chloe Grace Moretz grow up with them from
fair,
you know, Kick Ass to, you know, where she is now. So
I love the first Kick Ass movie. God, it's so good. Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a second about some of the horror elements, and we'll just kind of, is there anything that, what are the elements of horror, just to pair it with our podcast a little better? I thought Lopan, especially like when he's first like going to run over him, is horrifying. If I saw that in real life, I would probably just die of a heart failure. Bam. What's more horrific than just dying?
True.
And of course the
you know, they're underground.
Yeah.
They're fighting underground and Lopan is such a creepy old man at first, you know, when he's got the old man figure. I mean
the big prosthetic
old
makeup.
Can be scary. Yeah, old people can be scary. I once went to the barber in Madison, and like the main barber dude had a line of people waiting for him, and the old man had nobody waiting for him. And I was like,
"Oh no!
I'm in a hurry. I'm not going to wait, you know, behind all these people. I'm waiting for the main guy. I'll let the old man cut my hair."
This is the scariest story I've ever heard right now. Oh god!
And next thing I know,
oh god,
he's leaned over cutting my hair, and old man testicles are just pressed against the back of my hand.
No.
And I was pinned there. I didn't feel like I could move because, it's just, oh no, it was awful.
Oh my God. Oh, jeez.
He Weinsteined me. And it was bad.
I can only imagine what they actually looked like was like Lopan in that old man makeup.
Yeah. It was awful. Felt dirty.
And then the Beyonder, is that the correct term? For the head, for the floating...
The Beholder. Yeah, the Beyonder is a being that... The being is a whole nother universe that stole Marvel heroes and villains.
Oh, that's
and made
the
them
Beyonder.
Fight on War World
that's right.
In
that's right.
Secret Wars.
The Beholder. Or a Beholder.
Hey, yeah, there are multiple beholders.
And good lord, it's a great effect. It is, I mean, it belongs in a horror movie. It's so good. It's got like this one moment where the tongue, like, I forget even what it's doing because it was like so good of a fucking effects shot. Like it sticks its fucking 12-inch tongue out of its mouth to like lick something on its face or something. And it's like, what the fuck is this?
Very wet.
Yep. They succeeded. They fucking succeeded.
There are things that make no sense in the movie. Like Lopan has to marry a green-eyed girl, so he kidnaps the first two he sees. Like, there are lots of green-eyed people in the world.
It was, there is some weird kind of story things. Because at first, I feel like we're led to believe it has to be this Asian green-eyed girl. But then no, mm-hmm. Not really. I do like how in that moment when he decides that he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll marry both of them. And I was just like, there you go. There you have it. How do you argue with the bad guy? Like
you're going hard in the paint, dude. There are 8 billion people in the world, and 2% of them have green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say roughly half are going to be women, that's 4 billion times 0.02. You still get 80 million green-eyed people, dude. You didn't have to have those. You're into black magic, and you're old. You tell a couple of them you're rich and dying, and you're going to get a couple. Al Pacino is 79 years old. Right. He's having a child with a 20-something-year-old model. Like, come on, Lopan, you can do better.
Yeah. They didn't have the internet then. They were just so, like, they were like we were back then. Like, you're just so lost in what's actually the world. You have no idea.
Yeah, have you never stayed?
No.
Are you saying Lopan didn't own a TV? He couldn't stay up late for those, like, call me now commercials?
Oh, my God. I assume that you're right. He didn't, because, like, he'd have lost his damn mind. Like, these may be the only 2 green-eyed women he'd ever seen in his life. Yeah. I mean, well,
I'm really into girls with green eyes and souls I can steal and eat. I don't know.
And let's talk about his kind of henchmen. I mean, like, so Carter Wong, I thought was somebody completely, he wasn't. But good Lord, what a WWF primetime player this guy could have been. Like, he is big. This guy.
He is super big and jacked for a Chinese guy. And in the 80s, like, the really ripped one out. So he was just had the size. He definitely could have been.
Oh, yeah.
A contender.
And he could have went by the name Thunder if he wanted to.
Thunder. Yeah.
I mean, they probably would have called him Thunder Wong or some fucking. They probably wouldn't have. Halfway racist with it, but that's okay. That was what it was. At the time.
Every time every time WWE trotted him out there, like the music would have been.
Oh. Yeah.
Bong, you know, and
he.
So
it would have been. It could have been magic. It could have been magic.
Thunder and lightning, and the lightning could have been like. A smaller dude that's fast and nimble, and he's the heavy of the lightning of the tag team. So
we could have been bookers back in 88.
Yeah. Then he turns against his partner. DiBiase hires him, pairs him up with like an Italian dude, called themselves the Internationals.
Money. I hate him already.
I'd watch that. Oh, yeah.
I hate him already.
I would pay to watch him fight and hopefully lose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So what do you think about Kurt Russell in this? Like, just kind of overall?
I think he's good. You know, I agree. Think I ever have given Kurt Russell his due.
I'm a big Escape from New York fan.
Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, not until then, really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I like the thing. It's one of my favorite horror movies of all time, but I still don't really think I ever gave Kurt Russell his due.
Okay, okay, fair enough.
I mean, I got to come clean. Wait, you know,
I'll need 1,000 Hail Marys, and I don't know how the rest of that works, but more of stuff along that line, 1,000s. Is it sacrilegious for a non-Catholic to say that?
No. If it's sacrilegious against the Catholic Church, it's okay.
Okay.
So, I grew up in the Catholic Church. It's okay for me to say that they're all pedos. The Pope is never coming on the show now.
I'm going to have to send some emails and cancel some flights, unfortunately, but... You're just creating more work for me, Dave. Thanks. I mean, Kurt Russell, Snake Plissken, man, like Escape from New York, even Escape from L.A. I love it for as bad as it is. And obviously the thing.
It is pretty bad. New York is great.
Oh, New York. Oh, my God. Of course, all of this John Carpenter stuff. I had an idea while I was watching this. And I think Kurt Russell is he's a weirdly good kind of everyman, even though he's got this big chin and big jawline. He's very out there. But there's something about him that doesn't feel like it's completely over the top Hollywood actor guy that I like. And I wonder, and I don't know that it was ever even considered, what if Piper hadn't done They Live and it had been Kurt Russell? Because, I mean, him and Carpenter were like, you know, big collaborators, right? It'd have been a different movie for sure.
It would have been so different because I feel like Kurt Russell is a talker.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he might. We were just talking about, you know, Ryan Reynolds and his improvisational skills. I have nothing to base this on, but I could see that kind of thing coming out of Kurt Russell because he really just seems like he's doesn't take himself too seriously, but that he is a craftsman still. I mean, you know, I don't know that I've seen a bad acting out of him, and I'm gonna not blame Kurt for Escape from L.A. That's just trash.
Right.
But
there was a movie after that.
I've seen bad acting out of him.
I forget who directed it, but there was a movie in like the mid-late 90s called Soldier. And he was pretty stoic, pretty silent and reserved in that.
Tango and Cash?
Oh, my.
Captain Ron? How do you not like Captain
Ron? I don't know that I've watched Captain Ron, but Tango and Cash is my fucking jam. If you ask me right now, let's close Horror House forever and go do the Tango and Cash podcast. I'm like, how do I delete? How do I?
How do we get rid of this Tombstone?
A Tombstone? Yeah, he was Wyatt Earp, right?
Yeah, and then Bone Tomahawk. I mean, those Bone Tomahawk.
The first season of Horror House, we had a Kurt Russell movie that neither of us had seen. And I didn't. I figured you was like a long time Kurt Russell, for lack of a better term, Stan. Because God, I sure am.
I mean, I'm not. I'm not saying I shit on him, but I don't think I.
You just
held him in the regard,
right?
But I told you. I mean, I gushed about Bone Tomahawk and the acting in that, and you know, you could take the horror out of that and just give me more.
Oh yeah,
Kurt Russell as a cowboy sheriff, and I'm all in.
Yep.
So,
but
Ego in Guardians. I mean,
yeah. I just, it got me wondering, like, if Piper had not done They Live, I mean, was Kurt Russell even up for consideration? Did he not want to do it? Because, I mean, by accounts, Big Trouble in Little China was a box office failure at the time, which, I mean, you know how we look at these things. It's like, you made this much money, like, if you didn't spend this on this, like, fuck off. Fuck off. It's fine. But I guess VHS was still relatively new in the rental scheme, and the cult following of things was still kind of, which this certainly is one of those. I just wonder.
Yeah, there's a Big Trouble in Little China, and I'm not even saying it's the best movie by any stretch, but it has a place in my heart, and this is, it's Goonies with adults.
Yeah. I like that. Oh. This would pair well with a Goonies, a double feature. I kind of want to do that. That sounds kind of rad.
I don't know what else to say. I like this movie. It's just, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's got action. It's got a little bit of horror elements. It's got some fun.
Yeah.
You know, stuff to it. Nobody really feels like they're in peril.
Good effects.
Yeah, good effects. I like the dude when Thunder like blows up.
Yeah.
Practical. Yeah.
And even the lightning effect, like when he rides the lightning in, like clearly how could you have made that look any better? Even for like the next 10-15 years, how could you have ever made that look better?
It's so good. The kung fu stuff is really good in this. The fights are really good. When they get to the final fight in the underground temple, the ancient underground temple, who knew that the ancient Chinese, when they built underground temples, liked neon so much? But the fight is good. The action is good. This is, and you also know where I stand on kung fu movies. Love them. I'll watch them all. So.
Jack Burton is a hero. What? Have you read anything about Rock the Dwayne Burton? working on a sequel now, a loose sequel, but at some point it was considered a remake and he was going to be Jack Burton. Thoughts?
So, before all the Black Adam stuff, I would have had one train of thought, which would have been, yeah, I can see this. The Black Adam stuff, and it's not really the movie itself, although the Black Adam is got a lot of problems as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear the behind-the-scenes stuff and like what caused some of these problems, it definitely sounds like The Rock was part of the problem here, and his ego. And he's never it like Jumanji. You don't watch that and say, oh, he's afraid to laugh at himself, because clearly he takes jokes. But
right,
he's a little bit like Donald Trump. Donald Trump would never let you joke about his finances, and I don't think Rock would let you joke about his inability physically, the way Kurt Russell, like, he went for it like this, and he's not, he's all heart, but he's bumbling and he's not a tough guy. He's not really the hero of the story,
right?
Regardless of what they make him add in, but reshoot at the start of
like
the movie.
The Rock would want to put some humor on himself, right? But then still, at the end of the day, he's like, I'm the fucking hero of this.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I have a hard time thinking his ego.
Yeah.
Would let him not be the dude.
I agree. And I mean, I read that like a lot of the people he's surrounding himself with to like work on it are also big fans of it. Which is nice that they want to pay respect to the original and like build off of it, but I don't know. We'll see. I thought that was so weird.
It's a better idea than I'm going to hire somebody to do Freddy versus Jason that's not a fan of Freddy or Jason.
Right. Maybe he needs to talk to fucking New Line Pictures to know how to do a real fan service, which is no fan service.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine line, and I don't know that you can define that line, but you have to. It's callbacks and homage,
mm-hmm.
but you still have to provide good story. And I don't know. There's just something about Big Trouble that I'm not like, okay, let's see this sequel.
Yeah. I mean, now as a newcomer to this world, I agree. I just don't see, it's just not going to have the wildness of it. Like, this is kind of a wild movie. Like, there's a lot of stuff you're not expecting and they just go for it.
So instead of that, Brock, hold on a minute, Chris. Don't listen to what I'm about to say. Brock, I'm talking directly to you. Brock the Dwayne Johnson. If you really want to do a movie, a sequel, why don't you give me a shocker and you can be Horace Pinker? You can be the bad guy. You're going to have to let yourself lose at the end. But nobody comes out of Shocker thinking, oh, wow, like, you know, Jonathan was so cool. No. Everyone come out of Shocker thinking, wow, Horace was a bad motherfucker. You can lose and still come out as the dude. And
right.
You can do it, man.
God, The Rock is Horace Pinker. Can we do that? Does he have a suggestion box online somewhere? That would be hot. Yeah. That would be hot. That'd be good. I'm down. God, it would work out. Cause I mean, okay, that's good. That's going to send us down a whole fucking, go check out our episode on Shocker, which we have talked about. That said, I've got my guess for you, Dave. Are you ready to get into our overalls and, shut the doors in the horror house for another week?
I am, and I also have my guess down for what I believe your score will be.
All right, well, stick around after these messages, and
after these messages,
we'll be right back. We're back, and it is time to give our overall opinions. I'll go first. This was, I think, Dave's pick. I don't even know. It's somebody's pick. But we've got our guesses for each other, so let's do this. For me, overall, I'll just come right out. 7 out of 10. But I feel like I have to clarify. I just don't have the nostalgia for it yet. I feel like that 7 out of 10 can go up over time, and it very well may. But I mean, there are certain parts that I remember as a kid, especially that the big archway running from Wang blew my mind as a kid. But there's a lot of cool stuff in this. There's other Carpenter flicks that I'd rather watch, but that's also nostalgia talking, that I'm more just in line with them because I've seen them so much. But I do like this movie a lot. I think this is a great movie. You like Kurt Russell, you like fucking kung fu, you like practical effects, you like horror, but you want to kind of branch out a little bit. There you go, right here.
You don't know kung fu.
You don't know kung fu, but you can, and you will learn in Big Trouble in Little China. So, 7 out of 10, Dave. What did you think I would end up on?
I thought you were going to be at a 6.
Really? Wow.
So you outperformed me a little bit. Mostly because it's very adjacent, and mm-hmm. maybe it's horror adjacent even. So I thought it would down mark for that, but I like the effects. The monster is a little bit static, but given the era, it looks great. So, I thought you would be a little bit lower, but I'm pleasantly surprised that you're at a 7.
I broke expectations. What about you? What are your overalls?
So I do have a lot of nostalgia for this. This is just a fun movie. I could throw it on any time, but it's not something I get super into because it's just not that.
Right,
and it's again horror adjacent. So, I did mark down for that, but I also really like this movie, so I feel like I'm doing a disservice when I give it a 7.5.
Oh, I thought you would go 8.
So, okay. That gives us an average rating today of 7.25.
There we
go. If you're out there and you want to argue with us, tell us what you rate this at or how you feel it fits into the horror realm. You could do that on Twitter at sweetness1
with 6 E's.
Or at Horror House 2, because there's Horror House Dave, there's Horror House Chris. That makes 2 of us.
You can email us, horrorhousepodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to the Horror House page on Facebook.
You could leave us a voicemail on anchor.fm/ Horror House.
Well, you can't, because we don't know how long that will exist.
And we're going to put you on the air and make you famous.
Yes. Finally, like us, listen to us, and share us is the best way you can just help keep the lights on the old Horror House. You know what I'm saying? So,
and if you're on Slasher, which is the social media,
we are on Slasher now,
platform for horror fans, you can look up old Horror House Dave or Horror House Chris and give us a holler.
Yeah. And we'll talk about horror. That's what we do. That's what we'll continue to do. But one last thing. This has been a bit in the making, this Big Trouble in Little China. And there's been times over the years, Dave, where you've said something about something Jack Burton, and I'm like, who?
Yep.
And you know, now watching it, that's a whole shtick in the movie is Jack Burton. Who?
Yes.
I didn't know that it was a bit bravado, that I was blindly playing into this whole time.
maybe inspired
Star-Lord.
Chris Pratt's portrayal of Star-Lord, who
right
would play Ego. Played by Kurt Russell. Oh, shit.
Right. So, I would not put it past James Gunn whatsoever. But, I mean, we're going to have Mr. Gunn on the show sometime to catch up, pick his brain, maybe give him some ideas for some Superman. I don't know.
Mr. Gunn, explain yourself.
But until that happens, until next time, we'll catch you then. Same cemetery, different grave.
We out.